Back in 2009, the year a pair of great blue herons built a nest on a dead oak in Sapsucker Woods right outside the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, I spent an inordinate amount of time photographing the growing family. Our best views of the nest from the building could not show what was happening inside the nest. Finally, one day we spotted a tiny chick whom I impulsively started calling Mario. We had no idea whether there might be any other chicks hunkered down as one was visible, but within a couple of days we started seeing two at once, Mario and Luigi, of course. When we started seeing three, they became Mario, Luigi, and Princess, even though we couldn't tell them apart at all. Over a week later, suddenly, there was a fourth chick, noticeably smaller than the others. I called that one Yoshi. And immediately, scientists at the lab started telling me that there was virtually no chance that little one would survive because of starvation or siblicide. I should not get too attached. But of course I did. Day after day, week after week, I kept watching and photographing the growing nestlings. Yoshi stayed smaller than the others and remained in the nest over a week after the others fledged. But after they left the nest, Yoshi got the lion's share of feedings and soon caught up in size. Yep, all four young made it to fledging just fine. As it turns out, siblicide is a common event for great egrets, but not great blue herons, and the pond provided plenty of food to sustain four growing chicks and their parents. 3 years later, when the lab put a nest cam on that heron nest, the female produced five eggs. Now we had tens of thousands of online viewers, and our extremely close views of parents and eggs and then chicks vastly increased how emotionally invested we all became. A snowstorm and then a dented egg put people in panic mode. Some of the cam monitors thought we should prepare people for worst-case scenarios because, of course, it was unlikely that all five eggs would hatch and all five eggs would produce chicks that survive to fledging. I tried to keep my approach strictly scientific. Let's see what happens. Together, the cam viewers were the first people ever to have 24/7 views this close of any great blue heron nest. Everything we saw was new and fascinating as we witnessed all five eggs hatching into five healthy babies, the last to hatch, days later, much smaller than its older siblings, but again, all five successfully fledged. I thought a lot about these herons and how easy it was to envision worst-case scenarios and to panic at the first sign that something bad theoretically could happen after I got my suspicious mammogram results in January. I got through the follow-up mammogram, the biopsy, all kinds of tests, and surgery. I learned that I have the ATM mutation that had quadrupled my chances of getting breast cancer in the first place. That news made me actually feel lucky that I didn't get it until I was 65, and that when I did, it was nothing more than a stage zero, no cancer in the margins or in the lymph nodes. I made the practical preparations for worst-case scenarios, and this time they turned out to be unnecessary. I thought back to those herons. We got to see the moment each baby made that first leap from the nest. It was a long way down. Would its wings support it on this first venture into the big world? Would it crash into a branch on the way down and break a bone? Would it know to fly back to the nest for food? Would it be able to fly back to the nest so high up? What predators might be lurking? Danger seemed to be everywhere. But those baby herons saw the big, exciting world waiting to be explored, and one by one, the little guys opened their wings and leapt. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.